Hello, and welcome to New Books in Sports. I'm your host, Bruce Berglund. For each episode of the podcast, we choose an interesting new book on some area of sports, and we talk with the author about that book and about some of the deeper issues in sport, society, and culture. This week, we are talking about baseball books. Something I've learned in doing this podcast is that baseball is unique among sports in having such a large body of literature associated with it. To give you an idea, in just the first 5 months of this year, from January to May, 207 books on baseball have been published in English. That number includes 21 works of fiction and 53 biographies, not to mention another 150 books about the sport written for children. I've found in 2 years of conversations that fans of other sports from countries around the world envy the rich and varied library that baseball offers. In this episode of the podcast, we get an expert tour of the best of this vast literature from Ron Kaplan, the host of a popular blog on baseball books and the bibliography editor for SABRE, the Society for American Baseball Research. We are discussing Ron's new book, 501 Baseball Books Fans Must Read Before They Die, published by the University of Nebraska Press. Don't let the title mislead you. This is not an overly opinionated ranking of baseball books from number 1 to 501. Probably the best way to describe the book is that it is the delightful appetizer to the feast of baseball literature. You will savor Ron's selections and his thoughtful summary of each book. But I think that you'll also find your appetite whetted for more baseball reading. This was the case for me, and after reading Ron's book, I now have a long list of baseball books for my summer reading. So let's turn to my interview with Ron. To start our conversation, I asked him how many baseball books are on his shelves.
On my shelves, I keep a track on library thing. I'm a little bit behind, so now the figure is probably up over 2,000. And that's just books with ISBN numbers on them. You know, I have a number of other publications. Probably, you know, when you talk about baseball magazines and things like that, because that also fits on a bookshelf. Now, my blog is Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, so anything that can fit there, you know, is fair game. So that's probably another 1,500 or so, because I never get rid of anything.
Okay. And you have a line in your book, and I'll read it. I find myself depressed, knowing I will never be a true completist. I will never acquire every title, not even the ones deemed to be important. So I'll ask you, of those, you know, 2,000 books, 1,500 magazines, what percentage of the vast body of baseball literature, even the books just deemed to be important, do you have in your personal collection?
Except for the things that are really old, I have a couple of books in 501 that are from the early 19th century and are generally not available anymore. I pretty much have, I'd say 95% of the books in 501 are also on my shelves.
So what compels you to read the next book? You know, now that you have 2,000 on your shelf and another one comes in the mail, what sparks you to say, yeah, I want to read this one more baseball book?
it's the topic generally. My particular favorites within baseball leads to history, anything offbeat. You know, I don't know if I want to read another baseball biography about a flavor of the month player, someone who had one good season and decides he's going to come out with a book to take advantage of his popularity. I like the issue books, baseball during the Depression. I like popular culture, baseball in movies or baseball cards or baseball in music. You know, just things are a little out of the ordinary, and I think that's what authors really have to do more and more if they want to get their book noticed, you know, thinned out from the rest of the herd.
Mm-hmm. Ron, you do start your book by citing the small ball theory of sports literature, which was first proposed by George Plimpton, the idea that the smaller the ball used in the particular sport, the better the literature. And I'll ask, why do you think that's the case? Why is it that, that baseball, of all other sports, has such a strong body of literature?
Well, certainly it's the length of its history. Going back to the middle of the 1800s, that's a whole subgenre, which I don't separate in the book, in the history department. That's actually not one of my favorite topics, but it's the history, it's the all the different permutations of baseball that you can read about. You can read books about statistics. You can read books about history, about individual players, while strategy, philosophy, and I mean real philosophy, not just sports philosophy, of how the game is played. I don't know if other sports have that. I mean, sure, there are great books about football. I don't really recall that many outstanding books about hockey, and I guess technically that's not played with a ball, but so I guess the smaller piece of sporting equipment in that case, but and even basketball. I think it's the pace of those games are all, basketball and hockey are very quick games, so if you watch a game on TV, the announcers barely have time to get out the names of the players involved in the pass and shoot, and basketball is also very quick, and the ball goes from hand to hand to hand, so it's kind of hard to have that time to, you know, just sit and watch. One thing I noticed as an aside, when I listen to so many podcasts, that when I actually listen to radio and I miss something, I feel I want to go back and hit the rewind button so I can find out what he said like 5 seconds ago, and you can't do that. In baseball, if you watch a baseball game, the pitcher throws the ball, and immediately following is two or three replays of the pitch. Even if it's not hit, you'll have one from one angle, one from another angle, one from overhead. So it's a constant repetition in baseball. So even the topics are constantly repeated as far as the kinds of books that come out. And it's interesting reading the different interpretations of a same event, depending on who's writing it, whether it's a broadcaster or a writer or a non-sports writer. Some really great books have been written by writers who don't follow sports as a profession. Tom Oliphant, Doris Kearns Goodwin, George Will come immediately to mind, David Halberstam. These are not sports writers, but they bring something to the literature that sets them apart from, let's say, a sports writer for a daily newspaper who comes out with a book.
So let's turn to your book, Ron, and the books that you write about. And I'll tell listeners that the book is not really a ranking, so it's not 1 through 501 in terms of the top baseball books, but rather that you have the books organized by subject area, so you have chapters on biographies, books about stadiums, reference books, and so forth. But I do wonder if there was some specific intent in having, as book number one, a work by Bill James. So what place does Bill James have in baseball literature?
Well, just as to the placement of the book, the books are listed alphabetically. So it just so happens that his abstract comes first. Well, it's a baseball book. So within that category, baseball book comes before J.C. Bradbury's Baseball Economist. So I was very careful not to rank. That was a deliberate choice because it's very subjective. Reading film, music, food is very subjective. And my idea was just to generate conversation, which it's certainly doing. It would be perhaps a little more controversial had I ranked the books. Like, how could you? It's like ranking players. You know, how can you rank Ty Cobb ahead of Mickey Mantle or Albert Pujols ahead of Willie Mays? I just wanted to, again, create conversation. Bill James, I found amusing isn't the right word, but he is an amusing writer. Doesn't take himself too seriously. He was the first popular writer as far as analyses goes. There were certainly other books about analyses, but he made it quite accessible to the average person. What's happened since then, I don't know if I'm that much in love with. I think there is a tendency to overanalyze, as evidenced by the new generation of statistics, which may or may not be a more accurate depiction of the game, but I just think there's, personally, I think there's too much time spent on analysis of that nature as opposed to what's going on in the field, which is a game to be enjoyed by spectator and participant.
So following up on that, that first section of your book features works that offer analysis of the game. And in looking at those titles, as well as others in the book, it seems like there are two approaches to explaining and analyzing the game. One is that baseball is a simple game, and that authors seek to help fans comprehend what is profound in that simplicity. And the other approach is that baseball is a complicated game, and that fans need an expert guide to help them to be more knowledgeable fans. So is that accurate in terms of at least what I gained from your synopses of the books?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that there's even a step beyond that, where it's books analyses for the advanced fan.
Okay, yeah.
To make them even more turned up nose over the rest of the mere mortals who enjoy the game, and to separate them in a sense. But yeah, there are plenty of books that reach out to specific demographics. One thing, I have a couple of books here about baseball explained for women, which in a sense I find a little insulting. I mean, you wouldn't have a book explaining baseball to the gay community or to the African-American community. So I don't know why they think they have to include things in the women's book about, going shopping for the game or watching your weight by the ballpark food you eat. So there's the introduction to the game, both for kids and adults. There's books like Keith Hernandez's Pure Baseball, which is an excellent book. And I'm all for books that make you think, because I think thinking about the game will enhance your pleasure in the game. Some people might say, I don't need to be that much more educated. I just want to watch it, spend a few hours enjoying the game with my pals, and then I don't need to know why the first baseman stands here for this play or checks with the pitcher's position on the rubber for that play. That's a little maybe over-analysis, but there are people who enjoy that too. So there's something for everybody in this book.
So can I ask which kinds of books you're led to, or which approach?
Well, what you were to say reminds me of that scene in Bull Durham where everybody collects in the shower while the manager says baseball's a simple game. You hit the ball, you throw the ball, you catch the ball. At this stage of my experience with baseball, I like the more analytical things. Uh-huh. Because, I modesty aside, I know more, I think, than the average fan. And I like knowing the where's and why's of things. A couple of books written by and about managers and their thinking. I would really like a book to come out, which I know there are out there, but I haven't read one at this point that I've really enjoyed that much, about the general manager and his job in putting together a team and dealing with the pressures of the front office from above as to how you're spending your money and how you're making your transactions, and the people below, the field manager, and he has to play with the cards that he's dealt. So those are the kind of books that appeal to me in this particular genre of analyses.
And I would say I've mentioned on the podcast before, I've talked about my experience in coaching Little League baseball, and one of the things that in coaching 9 and 10-year-olds I came to appreciate is just how, even at its most basic level of play for young kids, of how complicated the game is. And that, there's just basic plays, throw and hit and field and so forth. But it was really remarkable to see how 9 and 10-year-olds, how, one aspect of the game built upon another aspect. And I gained this appreciation that it is a difficult game to play, which has led me to read more books about the complexity of the game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what you say reminds me of a book I just started reading, where it's a collection of short pieces, stories, and poems, and the author writes about his experience coaching his son's Little League team, 6 and 7-year-olds, So it's even more elementary, where you have kids who don't know what pants to put the glove on.
Yeah.
Or when you say, go play second base. So, you know, how many times, like 99 out of 100 times at that age, they will go stand on second base to start.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know where shortstop is. And it's a fascinating process to watch them, if they remain in the game, to evolve from that beginning T-ball experience into however far they advance.
Yeah, no, I long thought that you could do an experiment in cognitive development by just following children through the years of playing baseball and all the knowledge that they add in over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was preparing for the interview, Ron, I was looking back through your book and through your comments on each book, and I think the second time that I was going through it, I gained a greater appreciation for what you wrote about each of these 501 books. And I want to ask you about the process you took in compiling this list and then writing your summaries about each book, your summaries and your comments about each book.
There are a couple of books similar to this one that have come out. There's a very good one about baseball that concentrates on baseball novels, which I find fiction the hardest of categories to critique. I do not have a literary background. I have no training in literary studies or cinematic studies. You know, I don't know art, but I know what I like type of thing. As far as the process, a lot of it comes from the experience of doing the bookshelf blog. I've been a freelance reviewer for the past 20 years or so, and I've come to appreciate good writing from less good writing. And there are books that I think will enhance not just the baseball fans' enjoyment of the game, but also serve as an introduction to anyone who likes to read, whether you're a fan or not. That's why I do include things about pop culture, things about ethnicity, history, historical aspects that are not just Bobby Thompson's home run in 1951, but of the greater scope of the game. Originally, this was conceived as 1,001 books for a different publisher, but that project got waylaid when the publisher who asked me to submit a proposal on that was taken over, and the new management decided they didn't want to go with the project. So I approached the University of Nebraska Press. We have a wonderful reputation with baseball literature, and they suggested paring it down to 501, which I think was a very wise idea. So a lot of these books I do have in my personal collection. The ones I don't, I did extensive research just to find different things. There's a 1919 autobiography by Charles Comiskey, which was written with another person who have actually turned it into a third-person story. I thought that was a fascinating look by a very historical and often controversial figure to see how he thought his place in history would be perceived. And that book came out right before the Black Sox scandal, so I really wish that he'd come up with a follow-through, just like Jose Canseco came up with subsequent book after his first tell-all, and Jim Bouton after Ball Four.
There are a number of books on your list that can be categorized as important, meaning that they have resonance not only in baseball literature but in writing about American sports and culture and history. And I want to ask you about a couple of these books. And the first one I want to ask about is Robert Kramer's biography of Babe Ruth. Why does that stand out?
Biographies prior to the mid-early 1970s were basically written for young people. The stories they told were of players who were stars in the game, the Mickey Mantles, the Sandy Koufaxes, and at that point usually white players, not African-American players. And Kramer was one of the first to depict a legend like Babe Ruth as a human being with faults, with passions and desires that were heretofore unexamined. And I think, I won't say he opened the door, but subsequent biographies took a very much more human look at their subject matter. Look at all the books about Ty Cobb that came out that show him as a racist, as a bit of a lunatic. And I think Kramer was among the first to do that, and he did it very well. Had he not done it so well, I don't think future writers in that area would have fared as well.
And then another important book that I'll ask about, one that you just mentioned, is Jim Boughton's Ball 4.
That was, although Boughton was obviously not the first player, active player, to write about the game, he was the first to say, you know, look, we do stuff that that your parents probably don't want you to know about. We drink, we chase women, we take drugs. Our managers are not the brightest people in the world, but they're our bosses, and we you know, nod our heads, and then you know just do what we want anyway. And I think he was also the right guy at the right time. This is the early 70s, very early 70s. This is the Vietnam generation. This is the Woodstock generation that was you know rebelling against the establishment. And Boughton was the first to take that generation's look at the world and not accept things as was handed down by their parents and leaders.
So, Ron, you mentioned that you're drawn more to histories of baseball than to baseball fiction, but baseball fiction is very popular, mm-hmm. As you know, and you do list 22 books in your section on fiction. And I'm going to press you here. So how about a baseball number? How about three? So can you recommend out of that 22, can you recommend three books or three novels that would be a good starting point for someone who is new to baseball fiction?
That's difficult because baseball fiction is often said is not about baseball. If you're talking about just fiction in general, I can help you out there. But specifically for someone who's just coming to baseball, that's a tougher sell because each book has its own advantages and disadvantages for a new person. For a new person, I think The Celebrant by Eric Rolf Greenberg is a very good book. It's about baseball in the early 1900s. The main character is a Jewish jewelry maker who, in that generation, Jews were trying to assimilate into society, so they were caught between the old world traditions and wanting to become American, and how do you become an American for an immigrant? You embrace baseball, the American game. That was an excellent book, and there's a person who's just coming to baseball, so I think you know, that's a very good example. I again, like to look at some of the overlooked, the books that don't appear on The Natural will appear on everybody's top five list. The Celebrant is also pretty high up there. And one thing I'm getting a little grief about is I left out Shoeless Joe. My wife was the first one to point that out to me because that's one of her favorite baseball novels. How could you not put in? You should have asked me first, before you sent this in, because I would have told you that you left that out. Yeah, and there are a couple other books I left out too that I'm you know that's part of the conversation. You know, I don't know if I did that consciously or unconsciously, but I left that one out. If you don't mind, I'll just tell you a couple of my favorites in that genre. There's a book called Brittle Innings, which is a combination Moby Dick Frankenstein fantasy. About baseball, minor league baseball team in the era of World War II, that I found fascinating. It's almost never discussed, and even though the author Michael Bishop won awards for fiction and fantasy, it wasn't really discussed much in baseball circles. And I know at some point there was a studio that bought the movie rights to that. I think that would have made a wonderful movie. But that fell by the wayside. Philip Roth is known for a lot of things, but he's not known for his baseball novel, The Great American Novel, which is also a World War II story about a team in a third baseball league, which for various reasons suffered a lot of disappointments and a lot of humorous adventures on the way. Those are probably my two favorite books that you probably won't hear a whole lot about.
So you have 22 works of baseball fiction listed, but then you have 155 books on baseball history, and we could have an entire episode devoted to books on baseball history. But I want to ask you about one subsection you have in that chapter on baseball history books, and you mentioned or referred to this already, and that's books about ethnicity in baseball. So what does baseball history reveal about the history of ethnicity and race in America?
There are basically two categories within that. There's the Negro League experience and how African Americans were treated and mistreated in their long association with the game. And then there are the immigrant groups, the Jews, the Italians. There are a couple books that, because there isn't enough about other immigrant groups like Germans in the game, so they're lumped together. This, especially for the early history of the game, you had a lot of Irish, which is another fairly large subsection in there. The Irish were very involved in the game. Then came the Germans. And then the Jews are not to a big extent included. There are a couple of very good books about the Jewish experience in baseball. A couple have come out after 501 was published. Otherwise, they would be in there as well. Again, going back to the immigrant experience, how do you become an American? You adopt American culture. In the early days, baseball was not a profession that was considered a proud profession. You know, who participated in that? Even though baseball was originally conceived for the upper classes to play on an amateur level, once the game became professional, it was looked on as a lower class game. So this was an opportunity for groups that might not be able to get better jobs or jobs that require higher education to find livelihoods. That's why you have a lot of Irish, a lot of German in those days. The Italians, there are a couple of books about Italians in baseball that have come out, and now there's a new one out about the DiMaggio brothers, which harkens to that topic. I know I'm repeating myself, but it's the immigrant experience through assimilation.
So my field is history, Ron, and something I've often wondered with subjects in history such as, say, the Civil War, is will we ever run out of things to write about the Civil War? And I'll ask you this about baseball. Will we ever run out of things to write about baseball history?
To write about? No. We'll never run out of things to write about. Whether these things will be read is another story. Whether they will find a voice, a publisher. One email I received recently was from an author of a book about baseball during the Civil War. And since I had never met this guy or corresponded with him at all before, I didn't know if he was being serious when he said it was a serious oversight leaving his book out of the list. You know, maybe he was just trying to break the ice and be humorous, but I really have no way of knowing that. But no, because I think the Internet age has made research a lot easier. You don't have to physically leave your house in a lot of cases. A lot of old newspapers are being digitized and are accessible online. So you can do everything from home, basically. You get on the phone, you call somebody if you want to interview them. You send them an email. The harder things are going to be, a project I have coming up is, I refer to it as On Deck to History. It's literally people who are in the on deck circle when a major event happened. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys are getting up there in age. And I just was watching the Met game last night, and the broadcaster interviewing Red Shaendienst, who is 90-something years old and harkens back to what a lot of people consider the golden age of baseball. And I think McFarland does an excellent job in some of the subject matter that they publish, which would never be published by anybody else, as far as ball player biographies or team histories. So, yeah, I don't think you'll ever run out of things to write about.
Let me phrase that another way, and this is the way I put it to my history students, is will we still have things to say? So we'll have subjects, and that gets back to your point where you said, you know, people will find new things to write about, but the trick is getting publishers to publish it. And I think that connects with this point of, you know, will we have new things to say in writing baseball history?
So that's a very good question. In a way, I think we will run out of that. How many biographies can you have about Mickey Mantle? If you're going to take the Jane Levy approach and intersperse it, you know, he was a personal hero to her, and how disappointed she was when she actually met him to do a feature on him when he was in retirement. And, you know, this is like the Jim Boughton business. You know, it harkens back. This is not the player I want to remember. You know, I want to remember him as a strong ball player, a hero on the field, always smiling, always youthful. I don't want to think about his drinking. I don't want to think about his affairs. You know, I don't want to know about that. That was a problem with Richard Ben Kramer's book on Joe DiMaggio. People didn't want to know that he may have slapped around Marilyn Monroe, or that he was a cheapskate, or that he didn't treat his family well. You know, they want their heroes to remain pure. And if that's a kind of road we're going down, like the Jose Canseco books, where he's pointing out, you know, this one shut up and that one shut up, I don't know if a true fan of the game is going to want to know that. There might be people who want to know about the seamy side of things, but I have my opinions about those types also. You know, I don't know if you want to hear all the bad stuff, is that still make you a fan, or are you just looking for bad stuff because it titillates you?
Ron, you've mentioned a few of the overlooked gems that have been featured in your book, and one I want to ask you about, which I took note of. You have a small section on instructional books, and in that section you have a book, an instructional book from 1915, Baseball Individual and Team Play in Detail. So I want to ask about why that book, and I could tell from your summary that you really it holds something of a warm spot for you.
I just love that kind of writing. I think the writing in America has changed so much since the advent of radio. Prior to the 1940s, you didn't have television, so you had writers describing things in a way that put pictures in your mind. Radio, too, did that. Before radio, you only had writers. That was the only way to communicate, you know, what a player looked like, how he strode to the plate, how he flexed his muscles, how he hit the ball, how he ran like a deer. There's something about that writing that's so engaging, you know, because it does make you put pictures in your head. And then there's something about this writing which is very innocent. A couple of the pieces of advice, and this was written for college students, basically, amateur players, you know, college, high school players. And some of the advice is it's almost like a Ten Commandments of baseball. You should not smoke. You should get your studying done. You should be out in the sunshine. You should do physical labor. You know, you don't have that anymore. And I just thought that there are a couple of the earlier books for me are favored because of that kind of writing.
The instructional books now are very, very technical. It's almost has taken the life, the spirit out of baseball. It's just a series of mechanical moves that you must execute.
I kind of compare that in a way to books written about baseball cards or the industry of baseball cards. Back when I was a kid, you collected baseball cards to play with.
Yeah.
You know, to trade, I shudder to think that if I had not marked up some of my cards from the 1960s, what they would be worth. Well, now they wouldn't be worth anything anymore. But in the heyday of the memorabilia industry, you know, these you collected cards for investment purposes. And it almost seems in a lot of cases with these instructional books nowadays, it's an investment because you're hoping that your kid will take these lessons to heart, will turn into a great player, will get a baseball scholarship to to a college or university and perhaps even have a pro career. I mean, look at what's happening with it's not even just Little League anymore. It's travel teams, and beyond that, it's elite travel teams. So don't just travel around your state, but willing to travel all over the world.
Yeah, I had plenty of would-be valuable baseball cards that had small little holes in the top where I had
right.
pinned them onto my bedroom wall, rendering them worthless.
I did a project for school once where I, you know, whenever we all used to do projects on pieces of oak tag paper, where I forget what the topic was, but I took, you know, players like Tom Seaver and Carl Yastrzemski and Reggie Jackson and glued them to the oak tag, rendering them totally worthless in the collector's eyes.
So, Ron, I'm sure that you're asked a lot to narrow down your list, and I already asked you to recommend three baseball novels. But after compiling this list of 501 books, do you have for yourself some, you know, what you would call desert island baseball books, the books that would keep you satisfied for years and years?
Well, as I think I say at some point in the book, I refer to a line from MASH where Hawkeye Pierce is asked if he were on a desert island, what book would he want? And he says, the dictionary, because it has all the other books in it. So for me, it's Paul Dixon's Baseball Dictionary, because it's not just a dictionary. It's the study of how these words came to be. There are a couple books in there about the cultural history of baseball, which are extensions of the dictionary in a sense. They have long entries about hundreds and hundreds of aspects of the games. There's the two-volume Game of Inches by Peter Morris that are like that in a sense, as they talk about the game on and off the field to an extent that you'll find in a lot of small parts in other books, but this puts it together itself. The Tao of Baseball is one of that. That's probably in my top five. Tao of Baseball, written by the author with the pseudonym Go, and it talks about the yin and yang of baseball in a way that I've never seen before. And the thing about studying that aspect of philosophy is that when you think about it, it's so simple. It's so true, and it's so common sense, but you need to have somebody else show it to you, and he does that better than anyone else I've seen. You have the yin and the yang, you have the offense versus the defense, the pitcher versus the hitter, the fielder versus the hitter. Every spot in the lineup is compared to aspects of the I Ching. I just found it such a fascinating book. It's not the kind of thing that needs to be updated. I just wish it were available again. This is a book that goes back to the mid-1990s. One book I wish would be redone again, because it is quite out of date, there's a book about baseball food at ballparks, Fenway Frank's to Dodger Dogs, also written 20-some-odd years ago. And since there are a whole lot of new teams and a whole lot of new parks, and a whole different culinary experience, I think that's a book that really cries out to be redone.
Ron, you mentioned a couple books that have been published since your book has been published. So I'll ask, looking ahead to the second edition and of 501 baseball books, what are the books that have been recently published that you wish, I wish I could have gotten that into my book?
Yeah, there's a new book about Jews and baseball by Larry Ruttman. It's called American Jews in America's Game, and he does interviews with not just Jewish ball players, but Jewish executives, Jewish fans. And this kind of is, it's not connected with, but it's kind of an afterthought to the very good documentary, Jews and Baseball, an American Love Story, which I highly recommend. That's one. There, I'm not a big fan of, and I haven't seen any really good ones lately, because I think they're getting prohibitively expensive to produce. But I'm a big fan of the coffee table book, the books of large photographs or pieces of artwork. There are several mentioned in 501. They're not making them like they used to. Mm-hmm. So there's a new relatively new second volume book about Connie Mack, a biography about Connie Mack from Norman Macht, who's a big Sabre guy. I'm trying to think of what's come across my path recently. I'm reading a book right now about, it's called Southern League. It's about the a Kansas City A's team in the early 1960s that was the first integrated team, fully integrated team in the minors. So you have Blue Moon Odom, and you have Tommy Reynolds. You have guys, African-Americans, who are coming from cultures that did not participate in, blatantly participate in, racial discrimination, and then now they're playing in the Deep South and what that experience was like. So that's one that I would probably include in the next go around. Every day something comes in that you say, yeah, I think I would put this one in. I would take something out. Because, look, in a book like 501, there are things that are borderline. Mm-hmm. I would certainly put in, going back, not necessarily the new stuff, but some of the old stuff, I would put in Shoeless Joe. Mm-hmm. I would put in, I did not put in The Boys of Summer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
I did not put in The Glory of Their Times. And one of the reasons I think subconsciously I did not put in The Glory of Their Times was because of a book I read much more recently. It's Rob Nyer's Big Book of Baseball Myths, where he goes back, and in this day and age, it's really getting impossible for a player to exaggerate his accomplishments, because you can go back and check that in a minute. So he writes about the process of doing The Glory of Their Times in a way that made me rethink it, as even though it's a wonderful story, and I recommend getting the audio version because you actually have the interviews with the players that Rittman writes about in his book, and you hear their voices as elderly gentlemen and how eloquent they are. So I would even advise that over reading the book. But there are elements in Nayer's stories about that make me a little disappointed.
And Ron, to finish up, do you read books about any other sports?
Any other sports?
Yeah.
Ooh, pretty much no. If you say books about other things, once in a while I'll pick. I'm a big library guy. I go to the library a couple times a week, and I always get things that I want to read. I'm looking at a book right now. It's a new biography about Henry Fonda that I must have taken out from a library at least 10 times, and I still haven't gotten past the third chapter. But because I love Henry Fonda, I want to read this book. And I will keep taking it out until I have it finished.
You've been listening to an interview with Ron Kaplan about his book, 501 Baseball Books Fans Must Read Before They Die, published in 2013 by the University of Nebraska Press. New Books in Sports is part of the New Books Network, which offers dozens of channels and podcast interviews with the authors of new publications on a variety of topics. Check out the new podcast channel, New Books in Big Ideas, and bookmark the new site, nbndaily.com, which offers a digest of noteworthy author interviews and book reviews from other sites. If you like what you heard here, please follow New Books in Sports on Twitter or friend us on Facebook. You can give us your feedback, offer suggestions, and find links to thoughtful sports writing from around the world. I'm your host, Bruce Berglund. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your week.